Welcome to the mikvah.org podcast. The mikvah organization has been dedicated to the education and resources for Jewish family life since 1975-5735. You can support our vital work at mikvah.org/donate. Thank you for your support and enjoy today's recording.
Welcome back to our series on the topic of Shalom Bias. We continue with the fifth class of our six-part session with Mrs. Sarah Raskin. In this episode, Mrs. Raskin continues to teach us about Adam and Chava and the after-effects of the Chet Eitz Hada'as.
When we're talking about the 6 days of creation, everything that happened to the world, and specifically the first couple, every detail is so important because it's a first. So when we're introducing anything for the first time, we have to be more explicit and we have to describe it in detail and really try to understand it. So when we're learning about this dialogue between Adam and Chava and the snake, it's important to understand the entire sequence of events of what exactly happened, why the snake even engaged Chava in conversation, and exactly what the conversation was about, and exactly how the snake was convincing, and how Chava was convinced, and how she shared the fruit with her husband, and how there was an instant reaction, an immediate reaction where Adam and Chava felt that they were not dressed appropriately, that their nakedness was not something that they can just, you know, show this in such openness. It was just not right. And all of a sudden, that what Rashi had said, Shelo hayu yodim derech hatzniut, that they didn't know the manner and the way of modesty, of what is appropriate and what is not appropriate, all of a sudden, that knowledge, they became aware of. And that awareness made them ashamed. And being ashamed made them want to cover up. And they searched for the first cover-up that was large enough, a large leaf that they can create for themselves, girdles. In that happened instantly, that feeling of shame, that feeling of embarrassment. But also what happened instantly was there was a repercussion. There was a consequence. HaKadosh Baruch Hu came calling and asked them about their behavior, asked them why they did not listen to him when he specifically said, do not eat from this fruit. And is there a possibility that because you did not listen, that you feel and you are aware of your nakedness? And of course, we went through the dialogue that Adam blamed Chava and Chava blamed the snake, which is again, a very natural human, shall we say, I don't want to say error, or a human trait that we're constantly blaming somebody else. If it wasn't done, it wasn't because I didn't do it, because somebody else didn't tell me to do it, or somebody else didn't explicitly, explain how to do it, but not that it's my fault. So again, we're noticing how the human traits, the good ones, the bad ones, are coming out and are forming and shaping the human being. And in order for us humans to be kept sort of like in our best behavior, we need to know that when we're going to do something, there could be a consequence. And notice that I'm using the word consequence and not punishment. Because a punishment, not necessarily do I learn from it. I'm being punished. Not necessarily does the punishment fit the crime. So if I'm being sent to jail for doing something wrong, for petty thievery, I might be learning much worse tricks of the trade in jail. So perhaps rehabilitation would be better for me because I have this desire to pocket things in stores, to be guilty of shoplifting, etc. So here again, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Adam and Chava what will be the consequence for not listening to him, it's important to understand every single detail because these consequences are just going to form and shape the human being. So when it comes to the consequence that Hashem gave to the snake, we notice that it's really mida keneged mida, tit for tat. It's so specific. It's so incredibly on par with the crime that the snake did. And for every single detail leading up to the sin, we note that there is a consequence. The legs that made the snake walk over to Chava, and the words that he spoke, and what he wanted her to speak. In other words, that those legs that walked over are no longer going to be there. They're going to be removed. And the mouth that spoke will only be able to hiss. And the words that were spoken was to enticement to eat. And so you will, the snake will never enjoy good food, but always will eat the afar, the dust of the earth, et cetera, et cetera. You had a desire for a woman. That desire will be replaced for hatred between the snake and humanity. And you wanted to be like a leader over the woman, but you're going to be on the ground and the human being will be able to, you know, literally smash your head. And at the same time, you will show your hatred towards the humans by wrapping your venom, your bite on, and you can bite the legs of the human beings. So we see that it's very, very clear and really it fits the crime. When it comes to talk about the woman, we're going to note that the woman actually, all of her physical, her physical traits, I don't mean her physical traits as in her character, but everything that makes her a woman, what she owns as a woman, her rechem and everything that happens in that womb is now going to be activated. Which makes us understand that until the sin, a man and a woman could have been intimate and HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have found a way of having the woman give birth painless in a very easy way. And it would have nothing to do, would not have any anything to do with perhaps blood or a period before or after. And all of a sudden we're going to be introduced to childbirth and the pain that is incurred through childbirth and the difficulties that it will take to raise a child, et cetera, et cetera. And this is what we see in Pasuk Tet Zayin, El ha'isha amar harba arba itzvonech v'heronech be'etzev tel divanim ve'lishek tishukatech behuim shalbach. So this is a consequence which each one is actually the biggest bracha. I will make your pain. I will multiply your pain or make your pain greater, which would mean that you're going to have your period. You will have difficulties during pregnancy. You will have difficulties during your birth. It's going to be painful to give birth to children. All of these stages, your period, your pregnancy, your birth experience, are all blessings. Blessings that every woman dreams of. Imagine the first time your daughter tells you that she got her period. What do you think in your mind? Or what do you say? Mazel tov. Welcome. You're a woman. You're a healthy woman. I'm so happy that you're at this stage. You're now being formed and shaped and ready for your mission. And then when that same young lady gets married and announces to her parents that she's pregnant. Again, the thought is, and the words that we utter is mazel tov, baruch Hashem, that you have merited this blessing of pregnancy. And when you give birth and the baby is healthy, again, we give a shout, mazel tov. So these three stages that are considered consequences are actually the biggest blessings. And yes, growing pain. We want to grow, but growing comes with a little bit of pain. And this is part of it. And what we're going to try to understand and decipher why HaKadosh Baruch Hu specifically chose this method as a consequence. There could be many other consequences. Why specifically this? Now let's just finish the pasuk so we'll understand everything. The Elishech Tishukatech, and to your spouse, to your husband, you're going to have a everlasting desire, a desire that you will not be able to satiate. Again, a bracha. A bracha that you will always be in the wanting. Your desire will always be a healthy desire. You're never going to tire from being with your spouse because of your commitment, your devotion, and your love for one another. You're going to always want to be in each other's presence. And so this is the biggest blessing, because in the world that we live in today, we find that people suffer from boredom. People suffer from of a relationship that is on a plateau, that is a stalemate, and they have nothing to look forward to. And so they look elsewhere, chas v'shalom. Their eyes are everywhere because they think that somewhere else, something is so much better. We know that behind closed doors and with the curtains drawn, we have something so great, something so holy. And that holiness is our protection. That holiness is the mitzvah of Taharas HaMishpacha. So as a bonus to all of this, yes, we have a tshuka, we have a desire, a healthy desire, a kosher desire, a holy desire. The hu yimshal bach. So if you translate it, you say to yourself, oh my goodness. So what they say in the world out there, that Orthodox women are being run over by their spouses and they are second best and they're behind the curtains, behind the mechitza, et cetera, et cetera. And he's always out in the front line and they're always in the back, in the back end. What does this mean? When we use the word Moshel, Moshel, it would be a leader, even if it's a ruler, but it's not a dictator. A dictator is something very negative. When you have a tyrant dictating a country, that's very scary. That's unfair. That is based on terror, and there's a lot of pain that goes along with it. But if David HaMelech is ruling with love, Shlomo HaMelech is ruling with love, people embrace the king. People look up to the king. People wait with open, like they want to see the king. They want to just be near the king. They feel the king's love. They feel the king's embrace. They feel that the king cares and worries about them. How often do we have, when you ask a girl and you ask her, what are you looking for in a husband? Oh, I want to have somebody I can look up to. I want to have somebody I can lean on. And some will say, I don't want to wear the pants in the house. What does that mean? Everybody has their role. Just because there are different roles doesn't mean that one is greater than the other. But it is the role of the man that he should be somehow in the leading position, like we said previously, that he is the instigator. He is the one that makes the first initiative. He's the one that will make the proposal in marriage. He's the one that's going to rent the car and buy the drink and decide on the best place to take his date on, and eventually his kala, and then later his wife. So this is Derech HaOlam. This is how HaKadosh Baruch Hu created it, that the man, perhaps, when I'm looking for a spouse, I say, I want somebody a little bit taller. Why a little bit taller? I just feel that that would match better. But in my spiritual mind, I'm looking for somebody that's also a little bit more spiritually inclined, somebody that's going to open up a sefer, somebody that's going to fill my table with svarim and end his day with chitas and rambam, and be able to give me a dvar Torah at the table. And I'm going to look at him with awe and admiration and excitement. So when we say v'hu yimshal bach, that's what we're saying, is that he knows his role and he will keep his role. And I will be able to put my head on his shoulder in a figure of speech, meaning that I will have somebody to lean on. With his encouragement and the confidence that he's going to give me, we're going to move to China and Shlichus together. We'll be able to do anything because I have trust in him, I have faith in him, because I know he's leading the way. And I'll tell you a little secret. he might be the head, but we are the neck. And wherever the neck turns, that's where the head is going. So we need each other. It's just that we have different dimensions, different situations, and different roles. We're going to stop here for a moment and go back to where we're introducing a consequence that comes with pain for the woman. And it almost seems like it's not fair. It's a monthly pain. It's a monthly period. It could be a monthly disappointment. It's annoying for many, many different reasons. Here I'm on, I have to give a class and I'm in pain. And here I'm going on a vacation or I have a wedding that I have to attend. There's various reasons why we can say that this is not exactly what I am, you know, what I want at this point, or what I was, you know, it doesn't fit my agenda. We can ask ourselves, both of us, the male and the female, were both engaged in what we can call the sin, disobeying HaKadosh Baruch Hu, eating from the forbidden fruit. So why is it that the woman seems to have a consequence that is a monthly consequence? And what is the consequence supposed to, how does the consequence fit the, if we want to use the word crime, or fit the act that Chava engaged in? Again, our question is why the woman has this monthly reminder or this monthly consequence. What about Monsieur? What about the man? So we're going to stop a second because it's very important to understand that the man also has a consequence. His consequence is a daily reminder. Now, we have to understand what is the consequence, a reminder. How does this consequence help us remember what happened? And what is it a reminder of? So before we talk about the man, let's find out what it's a reminder of. The world was perfect. The world was clean. The world was toxic free, free of pollution in a spiritual sense. The moment that Adam and Chava ate from the fruit that HaKadosh Baruch Hu specifically said not to eat, there was a cloud, there was a stain, there was a curtain, the evil actually entered the world, and there was now a balance, equal amount of evil and equal amount of goodness, meaning everything Hashem does is good, but the evil could be, evil would mean the possibility of doing things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want. Which means that even just like the world lost its innocence and its perfection, the two humans lost their perfection. And in losing their perfection, the first thing how they felt their loss of perfection is their shame and embarrassment of standing in the Garden of Eden naked. And they felt the need to cover up. So they all of a sudden, they went from being pure and innocent to a whole new group of feelings and desires that plagued them. And so they were now considered two imperfect people. And we all are people that are born today in an imperfect world with imperfections. And our mission is to work on ourselves to improve and to hope to arrive at a perfection. How can we possibly arrive at a perfection? Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu is perfect. But if we cling to God and we follow the godly rules and we embrace God, then automatically we are on the road to perfection. So if you think a moment of the 6 days of Gan Eden, that was messianic. That was Mashiach. How do we know the Mashiach can actually come? Because it was already. It's not something new. How do we know that a person can get married? Because that was natural. The male and female were one. And so we know that that is the natural state. And that's why we know that that is what has to happen. So if we want to know how an imperfect person can strive for perfection, the answer would be getting married. Getting married is becoming one with your spouse like the original couple. So that's one perfection. Having a child and engaging in an intimate act would be another level of perfection, because only a Kadosh Baruch Hu is able to create something from nothing, Yesh Ma'ayin, and through a kosher intimate act, that is what we hope to be able to mimic or imitate HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But in order for that all to work, HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to remind us of the state we are in, the world we are living in, and how we could change this world. And so just like the world at large is now polluted with all kinds of poison, in a physical sense and in a spiritual sense for sure. And when the Rebbe said that the world is filled with chayshach, kaful, and mechupal, that the world is filled with darkness, and the Welt shakelt sich, the world is shaking, we see it today in real life. We understand the Rebbe saw it then and made us see it, and we can actually feel it and understand it so much more, that the world is shaking. But in this world that shakes, and in this world that is filled with such toxic and filled with pollution, there is so much hope. The hope of a husband and wife finding each other, getting married, and building a home. And in that little Gan Eden, that's what it is. You're entering your own Gan Eden, your own mikdash, your own little sanctuary. We have to tap in to the reality of the world, to constantly work on fixing our little world, the world around us, and the world at large. How so? So what I'm saying might seem very abstract and say, what is she talking about? What exactly, what does it have to do with the husband and wife? Let's take a look again at the text. We'll go back to Perek Beis, and we see the little dialogue in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses to give that commandment to Adam about what he's permitted to eat in the Garden of Eden. So it says like this. Vayitzav Hashem Elokim pasuk tezayin, vayitzav Hashem Elokim al ha'adam leimor mikol etz hagan achol tochal. So we spoke about eating is permissible and eating is necessary in order for us all to survive. However, umei etz hadas tovara lo tochal mimenu, ki bayom achalcha mimenu mot tamut. From this tree that's in the center of the garden, do not eat from it, because on the day that you will eat, you will surely die. Wow, that's huge. We always know that a Kadosh Baruch Hu, it has a lot of patience, Erech HaPayim, and he's has an abundance and unlimited kindness. It's a Kadosh Baruch Hu Mechadesh, Maaseh Bereishis, a Kadosh Baruch Hu Mechadesh, Maaseh Bereishis, Kol Yom B'Tuvoy, with his goodness. So this seems to be so harsh and so out of character of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the day that we will eat, we will surely die. Death is a finality. It's an end. How is that midah keneged midah? How does that fit the act, the simple act of eating a fruit? You know, is that so terrible that should create such a terrible finality, a punishment, a consequence? So here it is. We have to understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us. Firstly, the facts are very, very clear. If Hashem would have not told Adam that there is a tree in the center of the garden, he would never know about it. So we almost say that Hashem orchestrated the sin. He sort of walked us through it. He picked the interest of Adam and Chava and the snake as well. Meaning that obviously Hashem wanted that the world should be perfect. And at one point, we should introduce a duality, right, left, good, bad, Taivra, and the human being should ultimately use his brain and come to conclusion that he should choose good over bad. But if bad was not activated and did not exist, then he would be the same as an angel. And that's what Hashem already had that. And that was not his desire. His desire was that we should make a dira b'tachtayinim, an apartment, a home where he can feel comfortable amongst that duality. So death is part of that duality. Introducing something as harsh as death after introducing life is that balance. But we need to understand it. Why that kind of balance? Why wasn't there? There could be other, signs or consequences that will make an impact. Why such a drastic impact? Why such a drastic consequence? So let's understand death so we can understand the situation. Let's also understand, why is it that the woman got her period? And before we can understand why is it that the woman got her period, we need to be sure that it's fear, that the man got his equal consequence, and it's as fear as the woman's period. So yes, we see that a man and a woman at birth are born differently. We say that the woman is already circumcised and she doesn't need to be altered, whereas the man needs to go through a bris. And what are we doing? We're altering and we're removing the arla. We are tampering with his greatest asset or strength, where his organ that is in charge of procreation is now going to be subdued. Meaning that when we remove the foreskin, his desire will, his lust, his impulse will be much more in control. We note that this operation is so miraculous, whereas all other operations should heal. And the beauty of the surgeon is you can hardly see a scar. Here, it is not only that it doesn't heal, it's always raw and always recognizable. And you can always know when a child had a brit or he did not have a brit. And this child will always see that he had a brit every time he gets dressed and every time he goes to the bathroom and every time he goes to shower. All of this is so clear as a reminder, oh, so this is my strength, but this also is my weakness. This also is my imperfection. This is where my desire can move in, my lust, and I need to keep it, at bay. And I need to keep myself focused. And I need to conduct myself with a tremendous amount of self-control. So the man has his daily reminder, whereas the woman has a monthly reminder. And where is the reminder? The reminder is that she gets her period. So let's understand. What is a period? Every woman, Baruch Hashem, a healthy woman, is given at birth, is born with a certain amount of eggs that hopefully she will be able to use, that will be healthy and will help her procreate. Now, at a certain time, as a child grows and develops and actually gets her period, the period is a monthly period. And what would be the period a sign of? That there is an egg that is fertile. And if it will take, and if it will meet with a sperm, there could be conception. And if not, the result would be that the egg will need to be evacuated from the uterus, and it will come out as a period, as blood. So what is it? The egg, meaning the sperm, is potential life. When that life did not take, it's a brush of death. So we now understand that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Adam at that moment that he commanded him, do not eat from the fruit. For the day that you will eat from the fruit, you will surely die. What he was introducing was a human being that has that duality, that his that there's a certain imperfection in him. And there's always that concept of a brush of death. And that is being personified or expressed in the period. So now, let's understand what is death and what is a period. Death would mean the absence of the neshama. In other words, the absence of God. The body still remains, but the neshama is no longer here. It went back to its creator. So the person is no longer breathing, no longer alive. What would be a mitzvah? A mitzvah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Adam, do not eat. A mitzvah is a means of connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Mitzvah milashon tzavta. Tzavta v'chibor. And so every mitzvah that we do is an intimate act and is a connection. It's also our life source. V'hatem ha-dveikim v'ashem elokeichem chayim kolcham hayoyim. As long as you are davuk, you are glued to God, you are connected to God, then you are considered chayim, you are alive. So a mitzvah gives us chayis. Just like Hashem said, you may eat from every fruit of the garden. At the same time, what is he saying? In order for your physical body to grow, you have to eat. But what about your spiritual soul? How does that grow? Just like you eat breakfast, lunch, and supper, you have shachris, mincha, and ma'ariv. And just like you snack in between about four or five times, so you snack on different mitzvahs. This is what keeps you alive. This is what keeps you going. So a mitzvah is becoming one with God. What's an avera? An avera milashon avar. Avar means I passed over. I had an opportunity of becoming stronger and one with God, but I passed over that opportunity. Now let's take the word Kiddush Hashem versus Chilul Hashem. A Kiddush Hashem means, remember the word Kiddusha, there's a transparency. There is a holiness and an elevated status clinging to God. I am filling that space. That mitzvah is filling of space and making that space godly. So when I return a wallet that was lost on a bus, and I return it to a random person that I don't know, that he doesn't even know that he lost it, what have I created? I show that person that because I am God-fearing, I cannot keep what's his. And that created an awareness that, oh, this person believes in God, has fear of God. And so that other person starts to say, oh, maybe I should follow that path. And it fills that space with godliness versus a chilul Hashem, milashon chalal. Chalal is a hole, a void, a space that is absent, that does not allow godliness to enter, causing a void. Now imagine this scene. A person has difficulty breathing and they're in the hospital and they need oxygen. And so it's Sunday and they say, okay, I'll use the oxygen, but Monday I'm taking a break. I can't. It's too much. I'll go back to it on Tuesday. Imagine that from Sunday to Tuesday, the Monday, there is no oxygen. Will there be a Tuesday for that person if he can't breathe? And this is exactly what Hashem is introducing, this concept. What is death? Death is a space that is void of God. And that is why we do everything to bury the mace quickly, so that he can go back to a place where his neshama can find him. But as long as he's lying there, not buried, we call it a goof that is tame. And you know, we know we go to a funeral, we wash our hands, we know we made contact with death, we've made contact with a momentary absence of God. So every time we engage in avera, we are engaging in a moment that is causing a chilul Hashem, a void, a space, a void and a space. Let's go back to our story. If death is the absence of God and an avera is the absence of God, then we can now go back to understand a period. A period is a moment that we are reminded that there is a possibility in this world that there are people that will engage in imperfect acts. And so we're being reminded that we also are not perfect, that we are constantly striving to perfect ourselves. So the period reminds us of the status that we are in this world. The period, which is a brush of death. Now, what happens when we get our period, halachically? We become a nida. The nida means back off, step back, reflect, think. Where am I? What's my status? How can I engage in a perfect act of intimacy when Hashem wants to remind me that the world is not perfect? So I am constantly being reminded of the Chet Eitz Hadas. And at the same time, while I'm being reminded, to perfect myself. So in other words, that it's not a reminder without any reason or purpose. The whole purpose is, oh, remember, we're humans. We could make mistakes. We are not perfect. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us symbols and signs to remember that we are not perfect, but to remember to perfect ourselves. So at the same time that he gives us a period, and it comes with simcha because I'm healthy, and that would be the way, that means I have all the eggs I need that are fertile, and one day I'll become pregnant with Hashem's help, and I'll have children. So all of this are all the brachas that come along with it. At the same time, remember what your mission in life is. Step back. Now, because the world is imperfect, and because we are imperfect, even when we are married, and we're married to Mr. Perfect for us, and we're very happily married, there can be some little rips, little glitches, little situations where I might lose my temper. I might not be as gracious and thankful and respectful, or I might feel a sense of boredom or sense of entitlement or a sense of like everybody else has a better life than I, and look at what I'm going through. And therefore I can become moody and angry and with feelings of I deserve better and feelings of, you know, I'm going to use my womanhood and I'm going to refrain from being with my spouse. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a perfect, brilliant formula in which to keep our marriage at its peak always. So when we have this moment that halachically, al pi halacha, the moment we see this red sign, and I tell my girls, I say, did you ever notice that every stop sign universally is red? I think it's for the Jewish woman, because that red is like, there's no way of saying, oh, maybe it's something else. Maybe it's blue. Maybe it's green. Maybe it's yellow. It's definitely red. And it's coming at the time that I'm supposed to get my period, at that time of month. So I know what it is. And I know it's my stop sign. It's my moment that I need to refresh. I need to recalculate. I need to step back a moment. I need to abstain so that I can sustain this relationship. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling me, halachically, asur. That's number one. That's why I do it. Number two, I'm going to give you an ingredient to enhance your relationship. A moment in time where you can long for each other, where you can want each other so desperately that you're going to wait for that moment that you can resume and be together once again. It's so healthy and so necessary, and it creates a vibrant like an excitement and a wanting and a desire and a healthy desire that we're constantly waiting for something, and we're constantly have when you're looking forward to something, so there's that jump, hop, and skip and excitement in that relationship. And this is really that moment where My hands can touch. And, you know, it's more than that. It's where I'm completely hands off, but my mouth can communicate my feelings. My smile can caress, and my eyes can say it all. And my spouse can feel exactly what I am feeling and what I am portraying through my body language. And so I am growing in my relationship. And what I'm really doing is I'm nurturing the soul of the marriage. I am tightening those screws. I am creating such a deep connection and a relationship that it's no longer all about the physical touch, but it has taken a stronger dimension. It's crawling inside my heart, inside my soul. By not being able to touch, I'm going so much deeper. I'm looking at that person and saying, oh, you have a headache. Oh, you've had a hard day. I don't like the way you're walking. Is something bothering you? I'm actually feeling the other person. I am seeing the other person for who he is, and I'm getting to know what is in his mind and what is bothering him. So in conclusion, what we're actually saying is that the concept of a period is how can I possibly engage in a perfect act when I'm being reminded of my imperfection? So that is something that can help us understand that whole concept. And in a deeper sense, our relationship needs that. We need to take a step back. We need to, you know, when they teach a baseball player, the pitcher, what do they tell him? How do you pitch? Step back so you can aim further. And this is exactly what we're doing. So at the same time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is introducing life as we know it, so we went from perfection to imperfection so quickly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us the tools how to build that perfect world once again. So imagine if you buy a puzzle, you know, those puzzles that claim to have 10,000 pieces, and you work on your dining room table and you're really preoccupied and you got every single piece, and the last of the 10,000 pieces is in place and everything is there, comes a child and just throws a shoe on the table and everything, or a glass or whatever, and all the pieces are just fall off the table and they're all over the place. You're scrambling to pick up every piece. You know that there were 10,000 pieces. You saw those pieces. You put everything together. It's there. It's clear. And it's all possible, but you have to do it again. And it's going to take you a long time. So in order for us to get to the ultimate goal would be the age that we're all waiting for Mashiach. There had to be a moment where everything was perfect, where everything was in place. There was a perfect world, and there was a perfect man and a perfect woman and a perfect relationship and a perfect situation. And within the hour, all the pieces fell apart and everything went flying. And we went from perfection to imperfection. Is it possible? Of course it's possible, because it was. That's the reality. And we're working towards that reality. And imagine that the whole concept of getting married is so that we can fulfill that godly wish of creating that perfection. If we can create a perfect world in our own little space, then eventually we can create that perfection everywhere. Notice that when we say V'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha every single day in Shema, this is already giving us the tools and understanding of what is our relationship. So we say, V'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol me'idecha. What are we being told? V'ahavta. We have a mandate. We must love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu with our heart. B'chol levavcha. B'chol nafshecha, with your whole soul. B'chol me'idecha, with everything that is very to you. That means with everything that you own, with everything that you admire, with everything that you respect, with your entire being, you must love God. But I don't know God. How do I love God? How do I do that? It's impossible for me because I'm a person that's hands-on. I gotta, Hashem says, get married. Get married. Learn the art to love another. And when you learn the art to love another, b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol ma'idecha, you will learn how to love Hashem. So what is happening in the night of a wedding? Everybody is celebrating. It is the huge celebration. It's a mitzvah to be misameach chasan and kala. Who is celebrating? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is celebrating. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is celebrating firstly because Saif Ma'aseh B'machshava Tchila. That was his original plan, that it should be Adam Zachar V'Nekeva Bara Esam. It's one. So it's happening. It's huge. But another couple will understand what does it mean V'Ahavtas Hashem like. And another couple will learn how to cling to God properly. Because when you can master loving your spouse in your home, you will be able to master loving the Bayra Ayla. So we spoke about that the mitzvah of Taras HaMishpacha is a mitzvah min ha-taira, and we do it because Hashem said. But it always helps for us to understand why and gives us a little bit of a flavor and understanding of the why we do certain things. And when we know the whys, it helps us do it with simcha and with a comprehension and with an appreciation that this is really the best thing for us. So when we see the part that it's a marriage enhancer, that it's a healthy separation that we are engaging in, which means that everybody needs a chance to rejuvenate. Everybody needs a chance to feel the lack and the void in order to appreciate what they have. And so that waiting period is so healthy. And as much as it's hard and it could be frustrating, and there are times that I just wish I can get a hug and I just need that hug so badly, but that's all good. You can learn to get that hug from your husband's eyes, and you can actually learn to appreciate and know, oh, when he gives me those eyes, you see the love in his face. And so you're actually learning so much more about each other while you're not actually touching. And just to give you another little example of that, you know, we learned the story of Moshe Rabbeinu when the Jews came to him and said, we don't have water. And Hashem says that there's a stone and you will talk to the stone and the stone will produce water. And Moshe spoke to the stone and all the Yidden are standing around with bated breaths and waiting to see what Moshe is going to do. He says he's going to perform, he's going to give us water. They're thirsty and they're complaining and the water did not come. And so Moshe took his staff, al hasela hachach ayetzu mayim. He hit the stone and water came out. And this was considered a terrible chet that for this, Moshe did not go into Eretz Yisrael. We think a little bit, what's the difference? For you talk to the stone or you hit the stone, you think the stone can produce water? It's a huge miracle. So what? He took his staff and he hit the stone and the water. The miracle is tremendous. But what was Hashem? What was Hashem's thought? He wanted to teach us that when you, even in education, if you think about it, if you hit your child and then he goes to bed, or you talk to the child and he goes to bed, which is a more successful version of your child rearing? Obviously, if you're able to communicate and tell your child that tomorrow is a big day and you need your rest, and it's best for you to go to sleep because tomorrow you have to wake up for school and you like to go to school and you want to go to school. So let's go. Let's see who's going to listen to mommy quickly. That is much. If you can reach that achievement, that's huge. If you hit the child, so the child is going to bed. The results are the same, but the child is going to bed with tears. And you use your belt or your hand and your anger and at the end of the day, yes, you think the result is the same, but no. the child is going to bed with a very negative feeling and with a lot of pain. And it wasn't successful. That's not successful rearing. So here we see that the same concept we can understand with our relationship. Yes, we're told that v'hayu l'basar echad, that the mitzvah is to become one. And that's the first mitzvah, and that happens the night of the wedding, that we have to become one. And so physically we have to connect, and physically we have to hug, and we have to kiss, and we have to embrace. But then there's something deeper. It cannot be only on the external, on the physical. That's very important. That's the glue. I'm not mitigating it. I'm not taking that away. But if we only have that, and we don't work on the depth and the internal and the soul and the heart of the relationship, and we don't learn to communicate with each other, to each other, then we're missing a key component in our relationship. So just like when you study real estate, the first thing they're going to tell you, it's all about location, location, location. When it comes to marriage, it's about communication, communication, communication. We were given that art to communicate, and we're given a time in our relationship, a span of 12 days. And during those times, this is where we're going to learn an art. We're going to be able to keep our hands off, behind our backs. And at the same time, where we're not physically touching, we are touching so deep. We are portraying so much love, so much care, so much affection for the other, so much respect for each other, but that by the time we are ready to resume the relationship, it went up a notch. It's not the same as last month. It's so much deeper. It's so much greater. It's so much more exciting. So it works both ways. There's the physical that becomes more exciting, and the spiritual, the internal, the panemius of the relationship becomes so much deeper and so fastened. So you ever saw an elderly couple, they're sitting in the dining room and one finishes each other's sentence, and they're sitting there and they look at each other with so much affection. You say, oh, this Zadie and Bubby, they're so adorable. What you really mean is you feel that relationship. You feel that appreciation one for the other. You feel that affection. It's from years and years of working on that duality, the external and the internal. And it's like an accordion, in, out, and creates beautiful music. And so at the same time, there's a time, stop. Now it's v'hayu l'neshama echad. And very, very interesting, HaKadosh Baruch Hu always gives us, when he gives us a mitzvah, it's a mitzvah, it's a commandment, but he also makes it exciting for us, and it enhances our appreciation for life. So same thing with Shabbos. Of course we keep Shabbos because Hashem said, but when we sit around the Shabbos table, don't you feel the warmth in the house, that family time, that disconnecting, but really connecting so much deeper because you're disconnected from everything else, but you're connecting to each other. So you're having the best of both worlds. You're listening to Hashem. You have that mitzvah. You have that intimate moment with Hashem, but it also is putting a flavor into your life. We have an appreciation for that mitzvah because you're also enjoying it, which we're allowed to. So we're told marriage is enjoyable. Marriage is beautiful. Marriage is great, but it has to be done on the godly formula. And if that's not enough, Hashem says, I have one more bonus for you. And that is that it's medically savvy. It medically fits in with exactly how things should be. In other words, every doctor, Jew or non-Jew, in the gynecological department will admit that there's something about Jewish women that they have they're almost protected from having nishrakenim gedacht, cancer of the uterus or cancer of the cervix, because they're so in tune with themselves. And a little bit of blood, a drop of blood, sends red bells and red lights. And they're saying, let's find out, what's the reason? Why do I have that? So they go first to a bodeket, and they'll speak to a rav, and they'll go to a doctor, and they do things fast. Nothing, we don't procrastinate in this department. Why? Because there's a lot of reasons. Why am I bleeding at a time when I shouldn't be bleeding? What's the reason? It's not my period. So what is it? And it's having an effect on my relationship with my spouse. So it also is having an effect on my marital relationships, which is pushing me to find out what's the reason. And so I'm doing everything very, very quickly to figure out, what is this? But more than that, when a woman gets her period, her uterus lining is shattered. And medically speaking, it takes about between 11 and 12 days to rebuild that uterus, the uterus lining, the way it was prior to the period. Any activity, any relationships during that time is like going into a raw wound and could be potentially infectious, cancerous, or all kinds of other things. And so the fact that we are standing back and not engaging because we are committed, because we are listening to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has said and told us not to, we are also protecting our inner self, our bodies, our health, by not tampering with an open wound and not engaging in a relationship in a space that is not a healthy space at that moment. So again, we see that there is a three-tong benefit. Again, it's the mitzvah, it's a marriage enhancer, and it also checks out medically in so many different ways.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Stay tuned for next week as we hear the final episode in our Shalom Bias series.
We hope you enjoyed today's recording. Please take a moment to leave a rating or a review to help others find the podcast. We welcome you to support our vital work at mikvah.org/donate. For feedback, please email podcast@mikvah.org. Have a wonderful day.